Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
There's a little man in a little house with a little pet dog. Little pet mouse. I know where he lives, and I'll visit him. We have Sunday tea, sausages and beans. I know where he lives. Ah! Cause I know where Sid Barrett lives. He was very famous once upon a time, and no one knows, even if he's alive. But I know where he lives, and I'll visit him in a little hut in Cambridge. I know where Sid Barrett lives.
Ah. And the trees and the flowers are so pretty, aren't they?
He was very famous once upon a time, and no one cares, even if he's alive.
We do.
I know where he lives, and I'll visit him in a little hut by the edge of the wood.
Guys, I'm in.
Oh, he's trying to get to the earth here.
Oh, this is the kind of thing where a video might be better. But yeah, there's a squirrel that is, its tail's looking a little emaciated, but it's got a row of nipples on it. We can tell because it's running right up on the window. And we're in Highland Park. I'm at Nate Denver's house.
Hey.
Say hi, Nate.
Hi. It's trying to get to the bird feeder right now.
And this is Sadie.
So far,
any bird
I haven't been able to do.
Any burbling baby sound to Sadie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see? Yeah, that's you. Yeah. That's you.
So there's a lot of things going on. There's a baby stand right here. There's enchiladas are being made on the Science Channel. And and that sound happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were just talking about how Kickstarter is a thing. And Nate, you just did this promo Kickstarter thing for the next book you're doing, which is going to be a book and a CD also?
Yeah, it wasn't originally going to be a CD. I intentionally wasn't going to do it like that because it felt like it. The first one that had a CD occupied this zone where people would see it as one or the other. Because the CD was a full album, but it wasn't a CD in a record store or a record in a record store.
Right.
And the book was a full book, but it... A lot of some bookstores were reluctant to carry some of that as CD because that's a different animal. So I thought I'll just do just the book. So it's just text and drawings and then release a record later. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of people were asking if there was going to be a CD. And then Zach, Sally, he said, I think you should do a CD. Mm-hmm. That's how the first one was. And if this is a continuation of the first, should be consistent. And so now I got to record an album, which is totally motivating and exciting. I'm happy. I'm excited about it. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. So Zach, who put out your first, that's your first book. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's still been really helpful. Advice about how to go about doing this. And
yeah, extremely helpful. And he's got Lamano, his publishing company, going, and he's, I think he was just on a book tour for Sammy the Mouse, which is an incredible comic book that he does.
Right.
So he's working on stuff all the time. But yeah, he's an incredible resource and all around good guy.
And it's kind of interesting. I don't know how people listening. I'm assuming people that listen to this maybe know your background, but both you and Zach was in bands also for a long time. Like he was in Low.
Yeah.
So he's kind of understands both those worlds.
Oh yeah, yeah. So we met. Because he was playing bass for Dirty Three,
right?
Who don't have a bass player for this tour. They had a bass player, and Mick Turner from Dirty Three put out my first record, which is called Prepare to Die. And so they took me on the road, and Zach was playing bass, and we met in LA, which is the first, or no, it was like the second or third stop of the tour. And I walked into the dress room, and Zach was kind of huddled reading something. I was like, oh man, I think I walked in on someone doing something weird. And then but he was reading the comic book. He's just really into comics, and he's also an excellent artist and writer. Mm-hmm. Makes comics. And so we just became buddies that first time we met, and then remained buddies after that.
Your music that you're doing is Nate Dever's Neck.
Yeah.
Is like probably is the primary thing that you're doing with music now, but
yes.
Did that predate being in Total Shutdown, or was that a contemporaneous thing?
No, Total Shutdown. Paul started Total Shutdown first, and then pretty soon after that, just because I started playing guitar when I was 13 and was really into it for a few years, and then lost it, and then in college got back into it, moved to San Francisco, met Paul, we started that, and then just playing all the time with Total Shutdown.
Let's stand up, kid.
Playing Total Shutdown just got me back in that mode of, you know, coming up with songs and writing songs. And so, yeah, it just came shortly after that. And then, that's it. Just developed. It was nice to have, you know, doing something by yourself. It's cool when you're doing a band because there's no dissenting voice. And not that dissenting voice is a bad thing. It's why... That's necessary, but it's also cool to be able to do whatever you want without anybody saying anything. Yeah.
It's totally, like, I think there's, like, a major... I like both the things of being in a band and having that dynamic of working on something as a group.
Yeah.
And just having total autonomy.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice to do both things.
Yeah.
And then, like... I think that's interesting when I remember when I first heard the stuff you were doing then, because it was different genres of things kind of put together, like pretty different genres of things. And
I think it was trying to do too much or trying to do too much because it was trying to incorporate like beats that I always have really liked, and then trying to incorporate death metal, which I really liked, and trying to incorporate... I think it was trying to incorporate too many genres, but more than anything, trying to do just kind of like a show and tell thing of what I like.
Yeah, yeah.
And which is it was completely fun, but it was definitely scattered.
I mean, I think like that there's something really
still
awesome about that stuff, but exactly. It's like a little bit harder to explain to someone what it is.
Yeah,
well, it totally makes sense if you know what you're into, and it makes total sense.
Yeah, and what I found is it's hard to, sometimes it's difficult to convey that it's not a joke, because there are elements that are supposed to be funny, but it's also, and I think it's inherently sad. All of it is, not all of it, but a lot of it is inherently very sad.
Yeah.
And I think that comes through sometimes, but sometimes people just think it's a comedy act, which is fine. I like comedy acts, but definitely not the intent. And when I like when I started playing with corpse paint and doing all that stuff, that was supposed to be completely 50-50 of appropriation and satire. Mm-hmm. And the appropriation part was with absolute respect for that genre. Mm-hmm. And the theatrics of
black metal.
That I still really like, but also a satire of it because it is completely ridiculous at the same time.
I'm the Denver family, even when I'm by myself. I'm total shut down, even when I'm by myself. I am the forest, even when I'm by myself. I'm legion, even when I'm by myself. Let the guillotine fall, let the trumpets play. My neck will break the blade and I will walk away. The king will cry, the crowd will sigh, and a path will clear. I will return in 1 year with my army of deer. The castle will be burned, a lesson will be learned. Respect is not given, no, it must be earned. While demons get their sustenance from screams and fear, I'm eating dragon hearts and drinking unicorn tears. I run with stampedes and my pace is steady. When the demons come for me, I will be ready.
Swallow this.
If you find a forest through the wardrobe, don't trust the trees, cause some are spies for the witch and they speak through the breeze. Don't drop to your knees when the lion arrives. Steady your beating heart and hold your head up high. Sit and smile watching cats catch and kill little sparrows. My wrists are ripped apart from my bow and arrow. The cave is narrow up ahead. Remember what the shaman said about the curse and taking treasure that will leave us all dead. Not worried to run into the king and queen of cobras. I have a pet mongoose and he rides on my shoulders. My mouth's a cannon with the sword as a bayonet. Armageddon has been in effect. Step. I saw a ghost that scared me out of my skin. A massive muscle and organs were falling off my skeleton. I've never been to a dinner where they serve ghouls gruel, nor have I drank a cup of steaming goblins drool. Never tasted witch meat, never ate troll feet. I stick with Twix and ice cream, yes I do love sweets. I have an open mind, but keep your weirdo movies to yourself. I like Karate Kid, Pink Panther, Evil Dead and Elf. I got a smile at the ready and I hand them out free, and stop thieves in the street with canned food like Dundee. Try to be a bit better than I was before. And then my light opened the door. I hate on a first date hearing emotional gore. I don't care about the knucklehead she dated before. I don't care about their jobs, I don't care about their cars. I sympathize, but it's too early for emotional scars. Chocolate milk by the bottle, awfully fond of Colorado. When a pirate's on my tail, I drop the hammer on the throttle. Wear a helmet on my head and my skin is chainmail. Sharks are shook, my voice booms like a killer whale. Dug a cave in the woods to hide everything I own. Wear the skin of a bear, now the forest my home. Sleep and eat all alone. Call my dad on the phone. I miss him every single day. Sometimes I hate being grown. Every year my hair grows a bit thinner on top, but shoulders have thickened up, so punches help foes drop. The clip-clop of my horse is a misleading sound, cause he walks on the air, his hooves never touch the ground. The hairs on my beard are sharp like thorns on roses. I run quickly over hurdles just like Edwin Moses. My nose is a couple inches above my chin. I like the nose on the kid from Midnight's Children. I like the girl who's so pretty that they cut her face. When I was six, I sprayed myself with my mother's mace. I don't remember the taste, but I remember the sting. No photographic memory, but I recall most things. But when my brother sings, it doesn't happen a lot. A warrior with a voice, who would have thought? Loved to sing in church, that's where I got my start. My grandma knew every single church hymn by heart. I'd hold the book in a way that she and I could see. She'd look ahead and sing and pray and ask for God's mercy. Never forget the way she helped my mom, my brother, and me. Can't articulate the amount of love I have for my family. It hurts me sometimes to think about the fallen family and friends. I hope when I die I see them all again. Truly one of a kind, some of the nicest people that you'll ever find, and mean as hell at the same time.
I also wanted to like touch on this thing. I don't know if you've heard about the thing, the book that like Paul's working on. He's probably talked to you about this book idea.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking about it because I feel like that's like a, you know, when the period where we met,
yeah,
and there was a lot of stuff going on in that time period.
Yeah,
and it's hard for me to really have any objectivity about it, which I think is why it's interesting to do a book.
Right.
If it's like, is this going to be a thing that only matters to, like, the whatever 50 to 100 people that were around?
Right.
Or is it going to have some kind of... I think... I don't know if they're trying to make it be more like something like, you know, Please Kill Me.
Right.
Or there was recently a Bay Area punk rock book called Give Me Something Better.
Oh, I need to see that.
Yeah, it's all right. It's an oral history. It's kind of a similar thing.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be more focused on, I think, photography and flyers and the art aspects of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I definitely felt like when things were going on in that time period, like... I definitely had a thing, thought in the back of my head, like, this is, like, important, and this will be important
right.
down the road.
Too. I did, too.
And I think that everyone who was part of that felt a little bit that way, and we're kind of, like, perpetuating that. And I don't know whether that's true or not.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
You don't think it's actually true?
Yeah, at the time, I felt that, too, because I had no experience with that kind of music. Like,
right.
when Paul... Like Boxleitner, I'd never seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. All those bands, I'd never seen any numbers reminded me of Devo. I love Devo.
Yeah, I think they hate that. And also, they hate Pink Cabrera. And B-52s. I think I call them.
See, even Devo was new to me then. I wasn't into that stuff growing up. I was into three punk bands. I was into Black Flag, mm-hmm. Dead Kennedys, and I guess Bad Brains. But I don't really even.
Yeah,
consider them the same genre, you know.
Right.
But anyway, I was into those bands, and then I was into Minutemen big time. But then I was into rap, and then I was into Slayer. I don't have the background that Costuros has in mm-hmm. punk, so and I didn't know anything about John Zorn or any of that stuff.
Right.
So to me, I was like, Paul invented a new genre of music. This is totally new. I've never heard anything like
right,
this.
Right.
And so I had the same feeling, and.
Now it's like 12 years later. It's a funny thing.
It's 12 years later, and a lot of it is so inaccessible, whereas you look at a lot of... When you look at a lot of those movements, it's still like pretty straightforward rock and roll.
Right.
A lot of the movements that happened before ours, and ours is kind of hard to listen to. You know? it's not like that. And some of it is pretty straightforward. But I remember at the time thinking, oh, man, those bands are... So basic.
Yeah.
Ours is so crazy. And it.
But it, I think it wasn't just the. Because I think there was so much of a performance aspect to it, especially right. when I think yeah. about what Total Shutdown was doing. It was bringing together a lot of. Like, I think it was at the same time. It's funny because when we. I'd known that you guys existed, and at the same time, like, I think the first time we saw or played a show with you guys, it made sense because I was talking to Gabe about this whole. Like, I want to do a band that is like. That is like an Andy Kaufman type band.
Yeah.
You know? Right. But like, it sounds like this, but is doing this stuff. And you guys were doing it better than we were doing it. And that's what I thought was exciting about it, too. But no, I think it's a combination of like, I think being that age and being impressionable at a certain age and like thinking that you're reinventing the wheel.
That's right, reinventing.
And that's what I think every group of like 23 to 25 year olds in a cool city that's
absolutely.
Making whatever they're making, whether it's skateboards or photography or weird noise bands with costumes, it's probably the similar thing. And it feels weird to think, God, that was like 12 years ago for us.
I know.
I mean, you know, it doesn't really feel that way inside.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is why I think, like, putting it, documenting it all, I'm like, I'm a little afraid to document this.
Well, I'm excited about it, just because I would love to have all those flyers.
Exactly,
place and
yeah.
a yearbook of
It's like a yearbook. It is like a yearbook.
It was insanely fun. I don't really like going out, and I'd go out every night during that time and see
yeah.
if there'd be something different and fun every night.
It was like San Francisco around, like, 99, 2000.
Yeah.
I think it kind of died off around 2003 or so.
Yeah. Yeah,
things
so.
Kind of like tapered into different points.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, no, I think that's right. Yeah, I'll be curious to see what they come up with.
Yeah.
And I mean, in hindsight, some of the best stuff that would come through with people from the Midwest coming just on tour would be like, oh.
Yeah.
So you can get weird and be listening. Like, I'll listen to the record more than one time.
Mm-hmm.
Or, because it seems like a lot of our records from our scene was more like, an acknowledgement of the scene and a commemoration of the act, but it's hard to capture what the performances were.
I especially think that with like you with you guys, even though like I think like, you know, the records are good, but like it just you really need just like a DVD or yeah. something of that yeah. stuff.
Put a hologram or just, on hologram on those records.
Yeah, because it was just like more way more confrontational and way more just
yeah.
physical of a thing. And like I was funny, I was thinking about it, like I would get more bummed out if someone didn't like you guys and if they didn't like our band.
Oh, really?
Because it was kind of like, I'm like, look, I know we're kind of idiots, but like I thought you guys were doing something that was like made more of a sense in a general sense. I mean, like, I feel like we went in kind of knowing that what we were trying to do was like too kind of like what you're saying about what you were trying to do when you first started Nate Denver's Neck. It was like right. with Boxliner, I think we were trying to jam all sorts of ideas and possibly conflicting ideas.
Yeah.
Together.
Right.
So.
For me, I mean, Bob and Paul are so literate in that, in performance and all those bands and all that stuff that they'd give Pete and I idea, tell us what they were thinking and ideas and stuff. And I mean, for me, most of the time, I had no idea what they were talking about.
Right.
And then I see, the first show, I saw Paul go berserk. I've never seen someone go berserk like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was super exciting, totally cool and exciting. And he's like, yeah, go more crazy. And that was really fun, but I had no frame of reference for any of that
right.
stuff.
Right, okay, that makes sense.
I had never seen yeah. any of that stuff.
Well, I think only I knew thing, that, yeah.
Like, he just found out I could do death metal vocals. He's like, just do that and scream. And I was so stoked because I have always wanted to be in a death metal band, so
yeah.
I was like, oh, cool. So this is a new genre of music? Like, what is this? Because death metal vocals don't go with this kind of music. It was neat. Back to language time! Back to language time! Back to language time!
Interviews I've done are ones where I have no questions written down, we just have a conversation. However, you get stuck sometimes on those. And
yeah.
the questions I always think are interesting are the ones that are stuff you'd be curious about anybody. Like,
mm-hmm.
what's your favorite thing about yourself, or what do you not like about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's your favorite thing about laughing, or what's your favorite thing about you know, first dates, or all that stuff that everyone can relate to. That's the stuff I always try and ask for.
Yeah.
Or bands like Slayer that you've liked since elementary school, you genuinely have questions that you've had for
yeah.
15 years. Those ones are pretty fun too, to be able to ask.
Are you still doing any of that
yeah.
kind of writing and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah,
you're still doing it?
Not as much
right.
as I used to. But yeah, still doing
yeah. stuff. Yeah. For a Slap or for...
No,
or
not... Pretty much only for this magazine called Complex now.
Okay, yeah, I remember
which,
that. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
totally fun. They get me into weird interviews. So
yeah.
it's still I still enjoy interviewing people
yeah.
just because everyone's life is interesting
yeah.
pretty much.
I guess that's good because I kind of hit this wall with music writing where I felt like I didn't want to talk to bands anymore.
Well, I completely stopped writing record reviews
yeah.
because I had I think I think I
after 10 years of doing it, became two or three reviews that would just be, have a couple different words inserted or the same joke a different way. Because there's only so many, I mean, it's, particularly because I was writing about mostly death metal and rap. Mm-hmm. And for you can only say brutal riffs so many times. Or like the double bass stuff is this fast. Or like, it's such similar language. It's hard to differentiate. Whereas just like any genre you're not listening to, like to me, techno all sounds the same. If I got into it, I'd be able to hear the difference. But just like all rap sounds the same to my dad and all death metal sounds the same to my mom. Mm-hmm. I can hear the difference in that stuff. But it's hard to articulate.
Yeah.
And also, at a point, kind of pointless to articulate. It's just, it's good, or I like it, or I don't like it.
Well, I think that was also, like, when we were both kind of getting into that, probably, was, now it's like, hey, I heard about a band, I'll just look it up on YouTube.
I know,
That's right. And when we were starting, that was, you actually needed, hey, someone articulating this a little bit.
Right.
Should
I pay money for this thing?
Yeah, or is this something worth checking out? And now it's like, it's, I guess, leveled the playing field in some ways, but I feel like it hasn't. I mean, you're more on the other end of it now because it's like you're about to put out a record and a book. It's like, how do you get publicity when like everything, you're battling all the free information out there? I'm like, why would I listen to something new when I know I can listen to all these things for free that I know I like?
And when you're going to, for me, it's hard, not hard, but MP3s have made music listening experience totally different. I don't listen to albums anymore, and it sucks because listening to a cassette, you had to listen to the song that sucks in between the songs that were good, and after 20 times the song that sucks becomes your favorite song. You go, I hear this nuance or whatever, and I love that now, and you don't have that anymore. You just skip everything. Mm-hmm. And it's just so disposable now. It is strange to be thinking about putting out a record. Just because, I don't know how many, you put so much time into making one, and you go, when I buy one now, I listen to it like 2-3 times, and then it's just on my playlist, and maybe I'll hear it again in a year.
Yeah.
So, I've gone back to buying way more records than I used to, because I'll listen to them front to end, and we've got a record player in her room. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm way more into the idea of EPs now, too. Just, six back.
Playing with Ben a little bit, like he's playing drums with you. Is that still something you're working on doing?
We haven't lately. I'd like to get back to it just because it's fun playing with a live live drums sound so much better, except for, and everything except for rap. Rap sounds awful with live bands, I think, but
yeah,
for anything guitar-based, I think you can't beat live drums.
Have you heard Death Grips?
No.
Have you ever heard about that, Death Grips is? It's like Zach Hill, you know, the drummer from Hella, and he's working with, it's not his band, it's the other guy's band, but Zach plays on it.
Death Grips, oh yeah.
Yeah, the stuff I've heard is pretty good, but then a lot of people are like, it's just like a new rap rock band. It's just rap rock for 2012.
I'm totally into rap rock now.
Yeah, you might like the Death Grips thing. I'll forward you the thing.
I like a lot of that. I couldn't stand any of that stuff before. I can totally listen to 311 now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, somehow that sounds okay to me.
I feel like I've been
listening. At the time, it sounded like the worst thing ever invented. But now when it comes to the radio, it's okay. I like this
stuff. I guess it's like our generation's like background. Like, I will listen to a lot of 90s music that I didn't really care for.
Yeah,
and like
too.
It's just there. So yeah.
I think it's because we've heard it so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hated Doggy Style when it came out, that Snoop album.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it. And now I love that record. But I think it's because I've heard all those songs a million times
like,
on the radio.
It's so like that tape.
I'm just totally used to it. Yeah, it's like listening to a tape without buying the tape.
Right.
I think that is part of it. You just get used to it. And just like when you go to a show and they're playing music, when the first time, any song that you recognize, you're stoked.
Right.
Just because you recognize and you're in this weird place, but all the weird, obscure stuff that you don't recognize, like, I don't know, because it doesn't sound good in a club.
Right.
But then any recognition is comforting, I guess.
Yeah, right. Like, if you hear the first, like, strains of, like, Beat It or something, you just know what's coming.
Yeah, and DJs will always say, like, they always try and break records on the radio.
Right.
Because people are in their comfortable surrounding, but then at a club, it's all familiar stuff because it's an uncomfortable surrounding, so it's comforting to hear something, you know.
Yeah. I was thinking of, like, there are certain songs that I remember just hearing for the first time and having a distinct memory of, like, the first time I heard, like, that Adele song.
Yeah.
Or, like, the first time I heard, like, Hey Ya.
Right.
And because it's just, like, there are certain songs where I'm just, like, I need to, like, look up what this is. It's just so odd. And the Adele thing, I think I had heard it a couple times until it really sunk in.
Right.
But then I think I was in this mental space where I'm like, I had just been dumped.
We could have run the deep.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, I had been dumped.
Yeah.
And I was like driving in Europe.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm totally relating this song. It's like, and it's like, you know what? Every country we go to, it's on the radio.
Right. Right.
And it's just like, I can't get away from it. I'm just like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And great.
Yeah. Yeah. I like her. Yeah. So you're asking about Ben and. That just reminded me that we played. I think we've only played one show live, but it was so much fun. And I still love playing live. But here, the smell, and then place Pear Space.
Yeah, but the spots are.
There's
good.
One other place that I played that was fun.
You got Homeroom?
No.
Yeah, it's like
every other place I played here though is not fun. It's so much different than San Francisco, and part of it is all my friends are in San Francisco, but. It's just such a different feel than what our scene was. And I think what it still is there, whereas here, I don't know, it's not as loose or there's just a different mentality of trying to make it. And I don't begrudge anyone trying to make it because I would love to make it. I think anyone who actually goes out would like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just this, it's not, it lacked the fun that SF had.
Mm-hmm.
So I played way less. I've played like 5 shows since I've moved here. I played more shows in SF than I have here, and I'm not sure what's missing. But I think it's that just a different community.
The camaraderie is different.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
Like, yeah, and also like I guess are more of your friends that you know from down here just people you know from being like in like the fire world or like the EMT
stuff. Yeah, I don't
stuff,
really hang out with too many of those guys.
Yeah,
I mean I have a couple. I have like. Yeah, my friends here are outside of music, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really hang out with anyone from the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
I have really good friends there, but we see each other. You know,
yeah,
we see each other at work.
Now, I was a little surprised when you went that direction because I didn't really know that was a direction that you were going to go. I think you started with the EMT thing. Or,
yeah, but totally with the idea of becoming a fireman.
You did have that as a long term goal.
Yeah.
Is that something that's like what appealed to you about
my brother's in the Navy and his the medic in his first platoon that he went to South America with, he got out and became a fireman in San Diego, Encinitas. Mm-hmm. And he was just telling my brother and I about it, and he was saying to me particularly, he goes, you could definitely keep writing and keep playing music and be a fireman. Mm-hmm. And I just thought about, I was still touring at the time, which, as you know,
you did a lot of tours.
I did a bunch, yeah.
Yeah, you did Europe a bunch.
As you know, it was insanely fun to tour. But I just started thinking about that. I could do this for the rest of my life, and I'll be exactly where I am right now, I think. Or I could put all this on hold for a while, work towards something, and then get back to it.
Yeah.
And so I just started looking into the fire department. The more I looked into it, the better it seemed. Mm-hmm. And it's neat because you don't have to sell anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and I'm totally behind capitalism, but mm-hmm. I don't like selling it. Mm-hmm. And it's nice. It's just nice. It's just a neat job. You just kind of help people in their worst days, and
right,
you get in weird adventures. And when you work with a good crew, it's just like being on tour because you're just joking around on the engine and stuff. It's really, it's awesome job. And so yeah, it was just a diversion. And if you have to have a job, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that I've always liked. I've always liked, you know, that kind of stuff, like climbing up ladders and being on roofs with chainsaws is fun. And having part of what I have to do every day is check my axe and the chainsaw and all these tools. It's like a little boy's dream.
So, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I still have that in me.
It's weird. So, I don't think mine was my dreams as a child were never in that direction. I was always just like I think I just want to, like, you know, command a starship or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's similar. I mean, it totally, for me, it's very much the aspirations I had as a kid reading comic books. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that guy helps people.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the invincibility that those guys have, which mm-hmm. would be nice. But
yeah.
But you have armor against heat.
Yeah.
It works for a little while.
Heat, that's
everything burns. But
pretty nuts, yeah.
But yeah, it's, just... The more I looked into it, the better it seemed, and it's turned out to be a good
deal. Yeah. So part of it is maybe like a service-oriented thing, like a community, helping a community.
And, yeah. Every job, I love quitting jobs, and this is the first one I've had where it's hard to feel bad about. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be, you know, bitter because there's not a boss there that is like, work harder. There's I have a captain. My captain's totally cool. He's my friend. His name's Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's not, he's not like, you need to write a better, you know, sales report or anything like that. It's the criticisms were like, hey, you should maybe be cooler to that person because they're called because they cut their hand off. Like, you need to be more empathetic. But we had a girl that jumped out of a car yesterday. And it's hard not, she jumped out of the car because she was arguing with her brother. And it's hard not to be like, he did what? Why did he? That's ridiculous.
I totally understand that.
But okay, so what's hurting? Just get on with it and not be caught up on that. So
yeah,
it's different every day, and also, I think everyone's fascinated with death, but I'm totally fascinated with death and scared of death.
Mm-hmm.
And we deal with death all the time on that job, which is totally interesting. And, it's not, it's sad once in a while, but you're so detached because you have a specific set of things that you have to do that it's not, my mom asked me about it. She'd be like, oh my God, it's so sad, so sad, so sad. And if you took everyone on as sad, it would be debilitating. So you're removed in a way, but sometimes kids mess you up. And then sometimes children of a parent that dies unexpectedly, that can be brutal too.
That's pretty awful, yeah.
But for the most part, you're there to help.
Right.
Which changes your perception of how it's all going.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, when I was talking to Amy yesterday, Amy's fantastic, and she's saying how, like, her whole family in Colorado were cops. Like, on her whole, I think, mom's side was cops, and she was at this point when she was in college where she was trying to look into being a forensics person.
That would be interesting.
That's what I thought. And it was like a little bit ahead of the whole curve of like CSI and stuff like that.
Right.
But she was like, yeah, this is a long time ago, but she said it was pretty dark. There was this guy that was going around
killing people with a hammer with the claw side of the hammer. Man. It's just brutal stuff. And it's like, you know, like, it's just like, yeah, that would be my job, is like looking at those photos,
right,
trying to analyze that stuff. Yeah. And I think, I don't know, I feel like the wave of all those shows, the forensic shows and forensic dramas, for a while it's sort of like, oh, everyone's kind of used to seeing that stuff in a way, but it's pretty different. It's sort of like liking horror movies and then seeing an actual dead body.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, these are not the same thing.
Not the same, yeah.
And, you know, you think you can have a little bit of, like, ironic detachment in one that you cannot have in the other. And
I mean, something that I see at work that wouldn't freak me out if I saw right now would flip me out.
Like
if,
right, because the context is different.
Yeah, because it's totally different context. But it's funny, you mentioned family of cops. My dad's side are all cops out in New York. And, you know, like most people in our scene and most people in our generation, you have a bad relationship with cops, which is weird, especially for guys like us that were not troublemakers.
Yeah, like we are not.
Always get messed with by cops growing up. I mean, you're used to getting messed with by cops when you grow up skating. But even that, it's bizarre to get hassled by cops for skateboarding.
Yeah.
But even aside from skating, I've had very few good experiences with cops, which is frustrating because that's what my dad's side does. Yeah. And even before doing this job, someone has to do that job, and I know there's good ones out there. Mm-hmm. But man, now doing this job, anytime there's a violent call or a kid or death, sheriffs show up as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want that job. There's not a harder job out there, and you have to put yourself in their shoes before condemning them of what a difficult job it is that for our job, we show up and they want to see us. They call us for help.
Right.
Cops rarely get to see the people that called them. They see the people that they were called for. You know, they see the criminal that the good guy is calling about. Right. And people are always constantly lying to them. Even good people lie to them.
Right.
And it's such an unbelievably hard job. Right. I'm glad people are willing to do it because you just open yourself up to so much abuse from the public.
Well, that was the weird thing when I was telling you about that car accident I was in earlier,
right,
where
that guy showed up and was just a jerk.
He was being a jerk, and then to the point where it's like getting a little bit nervous. I'm like I can't tell if he's actually threatening us or what's. But I'm like, then I have to if I think about it from that perspective, it's Saturday night in Oakland.
Right.
He's probably on edge all the time.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, like, okay, I just don't want to exacerbate the situation.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep it mellow. But, I mean, that's an interesting thing, too, because I know your brother is, like, super military.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know how much you guys will talk about politics or anything like that, but, you know, that's a similar thing. Like, there are people that are like, I don't like cops for these reasons, but, like, well, do you know any? And it's, like, same thing.
Cops?
Like,
that's
right. And, like, same thing, like, well, people might be against the war, but they can't be against, you know, the Americans that are fighting. You know, it's a little bit complicated, but it's also like, well, I wonder like how all these people feel, because we're at the generation where like there's cops that grew up on punk rock, there's cops that understand all this stuff too. And
I'll see guys on calls all the time. I love it when I see a kid in you know, a Misfits shirt or something like this, and I could talk to him about it, and they're like, what? we had a call, and this guy was wearing an Origin shirt, and so I asked him about death metal, and he was a jerk at first because I have a badge and my hair is combed, and then he was like, oh, this guy totally listens to death metal, and he turned out to be a nice kid, and it was so fun because there are definitely other firemen in my department that listen to death metal. I haven't met him yet, but I'm sure there's got to be one in the department my size.
Which just generationally, it seems likely that
I haven't met that guy yet, but it has to exist.
Yeah.
But you're right. There are tons of cops and firemen that grew up on this exact same stuff.
And punks that ended up in the military.
Totally.
Because it's like, where are you going to get money for college? Where are you going to do this other stuff?
Totally.
It just seems like they're stuck on this thing where they're kind of stuck having to justify things that aren't really their position to justify a lot of the time. Or like, I mean, it's weird to me because like, I can't even imagine like becoming a cop, but like, yeah, like Amy's whole family, that's the generations of people that did that, and it makes sense that they kind of like follow in these lines, you know? And all I know about it is all everything I see on TV,
sure,
you know, which is how most people know anything anymore, but
yeah.
But
yeah, it's our scene is interesting. Any scene is interesting, but in how ours, I always found interesting back then because my brother joined the Navy in 99.
Mm-hmm.
And so right before total shutdown started, so he's been in the whole time I've known all those guys.
Yeah.
And it was always interesting to me how progressive our scene claims to be. Mm-hmm. And how exclusive it is and how eager to talk poorly about military mm-hmm. and law enforcement they are mm-hmm. with very little firsthand experience mm-hmm. and without acknowledging that they're behaving exactly the way they think the military is behaving, the way they think everyone in the military or law enforcement is.
Mm-hmm.
My brother's the coolest dude I know, and he has a degree in fine arts, and he's that guy is awesome. And a lot of most of the guys he works with went to college or they're all into surfing, they're all into all the
right.
a lot of the same stuff that we're into.
Yeah.
And it was always a little frustrating about our scene, how quickly when people find out my brother's in the military, like, oh, how do you feel about that?
Right, like
I couldn't be prouder that he's right. in the military.
What your brother does is not conventional by anyone's totally. Standards at all.
Totally.
Right, because he's in that movie that just came out.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, so I don't know. Is it? And that's like a mix of actors and non-actors. Or
yeah,
it's like
all the SEALs,
documentary
SEALs.
Type stuff. But they're doing like a plot.
They act, yeah.
It's acting.
All, okay, all yeah. the SEALs are active duty SEALs, and mm-hmm. everyone else are okay. actors.
I've been trapped in my room for 3 long days by a tyrannical stuffed animal stuck in his ways. No escape, I've tried. And both times I nearly died. Snuggle tummy is a hippo made of cotton. Everything he does to this world is rotten. And you can't believe the beatings he's given. He's making my life seem not worth living. But I won't quit, I will not give up. I'm gonna escape and kick that hippo's butt. So I cannot stay here no longer. I'm doing push-ups and sit-ups and getting stronger. Day 4, I can't stay here no more. Day 5, much longer and I won't be alive. Day 6, I'm learning all of his tricks. Day 7, accepted hell and renounced heaven. Day 8, death is snuggle tummy's fate. Day 9, now it is escape time. I wake up early in the morning with his blood on my mind. Victory will be mine when I rip off his head, tear the stuffing right out, and leave him dead. I stand up tall like a tower or a mountain peak, but I'm skinny and tired, haven't eaten for a week. Mr. Snuggle Tummy is a stuffed hippopotamus. He's strong as an ox, he's been working out a Nautilus. So I wake up and get out of bed real slow, cause you and I both know that a hippopotamus is very smart and can see a mutiny coming from the very start. So I'm not gonna foul up my one chance. I'm gonna engage Snuggle Tummy in a death dance. I saw that he was already awake. Clearly this was not the time for me to make my break. So I said, sir, good morning, what can I get for you today? And this is what he had to say.
Today is my bath day and you'll lick me clean to make up for all of the horrible obscene places you placed me when you were a baby and left me in the closet where nothing could save me.
I said, sir, I was just a little boy and you were my best friend and my favorite toy. I had no intentions of hurting you. I just grew up as little boys tend to do. Then he jumped up and he smacked my face and my blood and his fur flew all over the place. And he landed on his back feet and he looked up at me and said,
take a seat.
So I did, I sat in lotus position. This was shaping up to be a hard-ass mission. Snuggle Tummy came back with a big knife and said, I'm
gonna cut out your heart, stopping your life.
So I sat there nice and still. I let a tear drop from my eye to give him his fill of power and control and wrath. Now starts the bloodbath. Snuggle Tummy let out a great roar and he charged at me like a wild boar. So I jumped up to my 2 knees. I'll attack Snuggle Tummy on the count of 3. 1, I will not be a victim to Snuggle Tummy. I used to love you. 3, you will not kill me. I punched the ground with all my might. It bounced, Uncle told me up, he was a hippo in flight. And I opened up my mouth real wide. I grabbed that knife and swallowed the hippo like he was my pride. On his way down, he kicked and punched my lungs and heart. So I stabbed him through my chest with a throwing dart. He tried and struggled to not have to snuggle in my tummy. And it's funny, he's in there to this very day. I carry the knife with me so he will never get away. This very day, I carry the knife with me so he will never get away.
I think people in the scene that we're in, probably mostly atheist, agnostic, like yeah. More on that side. I feel like I've kind of gotten the point where I think I was pretty much like an atheist. Now I'm kind of like, maybe I'll be agnostic. I think it's a safer bet.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like a weird way to position yourself. But a lot of that also, I think, came from the same place of like, just like, I don't want to do what people
sure.
want me to do.
Sure.
I also have a little bit of experience because I went to Catholic school.
Right.
So I know a little bit about it. And yeah. I went through this really, I just went to my brother and sister's confirmation.
Yeah.
And so we're like talking about like all these religious things, you know, like, and I had this experience of, I'm like, oh, I'm going to like kind of make fun of this service on Twitter
right.
while it's happening,
right.
even though I'm glad that my brother and sister are into it and
yeah.
it gives them a thing. I just definitely am having a hard time. It's more complicated in my family because I feel like it's like my stepmom is super Catholic.
Right.
You know, like when my dad passed away, it was like this huge deal for everyone, but also it was like, you know, like he wanted to be cremated and
yeah.
stuff, and then she totally went against
oh,
that.
And awful.
Just was like, no, he's getting buried here.
It's awful.
Put like a different name on his grave. Like supposedly he had gotten a Catholic name, and it's like none of us knew him as that
oh,
name.
Man.
Like it's very weird to have that permanently there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm
That's
trying horrible. To be a little bit more open in a way about just, you know, I don't know the answers to all these things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not the way you do it.
Right.
But I'm trying to, like, give people their space because they're like, you know, that's the reason we have religion. People, like, lose loved ones and you kind of
yeah.
cope with it somehow.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, like, since you have all these songs about death and stuff, I'm sure you have, like, your own thought process on all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean
we were raised Episcopalian, which is a very liberal part of the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
And, never forced on us at all and always really loose. But then when I was towards the end of high school, I have an uncle who's born again and he's a racist kind of ugly guy. I thought, oh man, he's always talking about God in these highfalutin ways and he's a total jerk. Not into it. So turn my back on that. But I never stop saying my prayers at night because I figure, well, even if there's no God, it's helpful for me to be thankful for my family and all these things that call them blessings or lucky things or whatever you have good in your life. Even if there's no God listening, that's helpful for me to acknowledge every night. And it's also helpful for me to acknowledge a forgiveness for things that I do poorly. And I'm not Catholic, so I've never done that stuff.
Yeah,
I've never gone to confession.
Confession, yeah.
But I think there's value in acknowledging things that you're doing poorly or that you'd like to improve. I also think there's value in praying for somebody else, even if no one's listening, because you're thinking about them. And I think there's value in that. So
yeah.
I never stopped doing that. And I never enjoyed going to church. I always just thought it was boring. And I never experienced this in the Episcopal church because those services are actually pretty fun. There's tons of singing and it's colorful and just kind of neat. But organized religion doesn't appeal to me just because it's a group mentality and you can't help but be competitive in a group mentality. And I don't think there's any place, my idea of if there's a God, what God would be is not competitive. He wouldn't think if you don't say my name, you're going to hell.
Right.
Or if they don't believe in the same God, kill them. There's
right.
no way. I would never worship someone like that.
Right.
And I have a problem worshiping anything.
Right.
Or putting anything above me, but I like the idea of
a god that's like Zeus or mm-hmm. or like, you know, an all omnipotent, ultra powerful superhero god. I like that idea. It's mm-hmm. extremely comforting to me. Mm-hmm. And I still say my prayers and I hope someone like that is listening. Mm-hmm. If he's not, that's okay.
Yeah.
But we baptize Sadie. I mean, mm-hmm. I think there's validity in mm-hmm. in that, in the idea of faith. I think there is a mm-hmm. a lot of value there. And I think where the problem arises is when people get in groups and do it and start saying that the way we do it is right and the way they do it is wrong.
Right. Yeah. Like,
because it's the antithesis of what the idea of an all loving being would be. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's tough to talk about religion. I don't like talking about it because
yeah.
if my idea varies from someone else's at all, they'd love to tell me I'm wrong, which mm-hmm. doesn't make sense because we're talking about something that's totally imaginary and probably doesn't exist. If it does exist, I will be so happy. I'll be so happy if there's a heaven. It would right, be right. incredible.
Right.
But it's funny to me in my music, my experience, mm-hmm. like my favorite death metal band is Deicide. They are theistic Satanists. It's totally based on Christianity. It's right. not the idea, and the singer will say like he doesn't believe in a god at all. Mm-hmm. But it's not. They're not singing about Nietzsche. They're singing about Jesus,
right?
Which is so romantic to me that mm-hmm. they have that much animosity towards Christianity and Jesus, this thing that's supposed right. to be all loving and comforting and wonderful. That they have a band totally based on the opposite of.
Right.
Of a certain religion that they're denouncing.
It's like I don't believe in Batman, but I worship the Joker.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that always really appealed to me, and it's also exciting. I mean, I didn't go to Catholic school, but grew up going uh-huh. to Sunday school, and to speak poorly about God is exciting. I mean, it's totally exciting, and I always thought it's like, Jesus, show yourself, I will find you, I will kill you, or something like that. And like, every time I say that on stage, I'm like, oh my God.
Like, you actually feel like a little bit, like you're getting like, away with it.
I shouldn't be saying this. And I absolutely have this thought, like, if there's a God, he is way smarter than my stupid sense of humor. And he's like, he's a good guy. He's totally having fun and trying to figure out who he is or what he's doing.
Yeah.
But it was very exciting, and it was always surprising me at shows when people come up to me and talk about atheism, mm-hmm. and because it seems clear to me in mind that even though I've got songs like out about killing God, mm-hmm. and I don't think I have any about no God. I know I don't have any about no God. That people, it's just interesting to see how people take whatever your idea is, however vaguely it's formed, mm-hmm. and completely appropriate and be like, yes, that's exactly how I feel. There's, mm-hmm. there is no this, there is no that.
Well, you're also doing it in corpse pain. You're that's kind of right. presenting yourself in a certain way.
That's like, right. People oh, this, are this is what I'm trying to get to. Yeah. This guy in Detroit came up and he's like, and he encapsulated the best after a show, and he said, to blaspheme is to believe. That's the saying, right?
Right.
I had never heard that actually. I go, That's exactly what I've been trying to say. That's what I've been trying to come up with to articulate what my thoughts are on all this. That I think
you're buying into it to reject it.
I hope there is something that I'm rejecting mm-hmm. that also is a total endorsement of it mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And all I know is when we did go to church and the last time I truly felt this in high school, it was incredibly comforting to think that there was a God looking out for me and helping me. Mm-hmm. And I've started to get a little bit of that back since I started working in the fire department, just because I've seen more stuff than I'd seen before that.
Yeah.
And it just puts you a little bit in touch with mm-hmm. the hope of a higher power. And but I mean, it seems unlikely, but I hope there is. I think it would be, what could be better than someone that was looking out for you?
You know, I didn't really, I thought maybe I would have some kind of like spiritual awakening because I've been going through a lot of this personal stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, I kind of actually almost felt like the reverse in a way. I was like, look, it made me kind of like be more anti certain, maybe just this particular breed of Christianity. But I've been, I was like really like just like calling it into question because I actually think, like, I was talking to someone about this yesterday, like, there's, like, some sort of similar pattern with the way that things work in the Catholic Church. Like, I was listening to an NPR interview, and there's these nuns in America that are, I guess, okay with birth control.
Yeah.
And the Vatican sent a letter critiquing these nuns.
Right.
And it's like, these nuns took a vow of chastity, yeah. a vow of poverty.
Yeah.
They helped the lowest people in society. Yeah. And they're like, you know, maybe these people don't need to have all these kids.
Right.
And the Vatican is, like, criticizing them. It's like, that is crazy. They were doing what, like, you guys are supposed to be doing.
Right.
And you're, like, trying to... And it's like, to be fair, like, it's their club. You can be like, you know what? Great, you're doing that. You're not part of our club.
Sure.
Fair enough. It's like, well, maybe there is, you know, it's like similar to the military in the way, like, you are part of this organization.
Yeah.
And you're not given much, you're not really given much agency as an individual.
Yeah.
And I think that's the part that bugs me about both, about those kinds of things. Maybe like the military, the church, you know, and just this authoritarian thing, or the corporate world as well, like where you are just kind of like given these arbitrary tasks to do all the time.
Right.
And that really bothers me.
Right.
And at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, this is maybe what we need to do to like get through this moment of feeling terrible and like missing this person.
Right.
Just, I'm like trying to give other people space to do what they want to do. But sometimes what they want to do is mutually exclusive to, like, what I would like to do.
Right.
And that is where I kind of get into the thing of, like, no, I'm not going to just... I can't just, like, well, let's agree to disagree.
Right.
And, like, you think this thing, I think this other thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, it was a... I was at this confirmation, and there was this sculpture of, like, the devil being some angel standing over him. And I was, like, saying to my little brother, who just got confirmed, I'm like, oh, like, that's an interesting-looking demon. He's like, that's Satan.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah. I was treating it like if you or I walked into, like, a culture that we did not know.
Right,
be like,
yeah.
Like, there's all these interesting demon sculptures over here. Like, no, there's only one demon.
Right.
There's only one. Like, everything that goes wrong is Satan.
Right.
But there's all these different saints
and
all these different martyrs.
Right.
It's like, how come they get to have a team and this guy is just one guy?
Yeah.
And like I was in this setting where they're just like, do you renounce Satan? Like kind of to everyone en masse, because that's what you do when you do the baptism.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I would have to be buying into a lot of other stuff to go along with just that one part also.
So I can relate, because at her baptism, Sandy wasn't raised going to church at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I brought home the script basically for the baptism, and it says, do you renounce Satan and all? Mm-hmm. All his works or something like that.
Yeah.
And I had a real problem with it, because let's say it's all accurate and that there is, that Satan rebelled and they're thrown from heaven and that Satan is a corrupted man and is responsible for everything that's bad. Totally necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have good without bad.
Right.
You can't have light without dark. That, and if all evil was eliminated, there'd be a new level of what was in the middle of good to very good to only kind of good,
mm-hmm.
and the only kind of good would become evil, good would become nothing, and the very good would be good. I mean, there has to be a balance.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, do I renounce Satan? I don't know if I want to say that
right
in here. And then to his credit, the preacher before, he was saying, you know, we're not talking about a guy in a devil costume, we're just talking about evil in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I can renounce that, absolutely.
Yeah,
I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
So that was okay, but it was just funny reading this thing that as a kid, you're like, yeah, Satan's the worst, but Satan's like the coolest imagery by far, and in Paradise Lodge, he's the sexiest guy by far, and his crew of like Moloch and Belial and Beelzebub.
Oh, he does have a crew. Yeah, he has a crew.
Those guys are way cooler than Gabriel and all these guys, except for, I mean, Gabriel and those guys seem cool too, but yeah, it's just funny reading it for the first time, being responsible for this little girl and thinking, I don't want you to be a Satanist just because they seem equally weird. Any like, you know, blind acceptance of something, and that I really think it's that group worship turns things wacky.
Yeah.
But if she developed a personal relationship with nature or whatever, she some higher power that can be called God or not, I'd be happy. I think that's healthy, and I think it's also indicative of imagination to think like, well, this tree is God, or the sun. You know, the sun is the most logical one to worship it, but you know, Odin or whatever he thinks is a greater power than you. I like the idea of that.
One at a time, sand them down. And one by one, they go in the ground. Their weight bends my back, it hurts my hands. Generations will come, and they'll still stand. Marking the dead for most of my years. Stone standing grass that is watered by tears. I can't bear to see the morning eyes read the words I write. So I set the stones in place alone late at night. I am a gravestone carver. Orders arrive every day. Someone loved has passed away. Long poems of memory or name and date kept brief. Commemorating a life or displaying a survivor's grief. Here ends their suffering, for some it's just begun. Everything the dead did for themselves is now undone. Some die alone, some leave a friend with failing health. If a grave is blank, I buy and set a stone myself. I am a gravestone carver. All stones for tiny bones that never had a chance. Parents stand above their child in a woeful trance. Children are free from sin, so on their stone a lamb. With watering eyes and a heavy heart, I do the best work I can. I never fear the day that death comes take my hand. I fear the cries of my family, so I'll live as long as I can. I do know I will pass, and my kin will carve my stone. My soul will leave, but these last words will mark my body's home. Go home, friends, dry your eyes. I will be here when you arrive. Do not fear death, don't run. Rather live life well, so you're ready to go when death comes. In life I loved my wife, in death I love her still. I've joined my friends and family, we're waiting on God's green hill. I am a gravestone carver.
How old were you when you first Frenched a girl?
Jeez, man. Honestly, probably in my like early mid-20s.
Yeah.
It was
scary.
It was pretty awesome, but it was a little scary.
Yeah.
Cause she was very aggressive.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Did you learn a lot in the first 10 minutes?
Yeah, I learned a lot.
How long was the first makeout?
that was a pretty, that was like, it was like kind of going from like I'd maybe kissed two girls on the lips and like without planning on it, like they had planted one on me and then like nothing. And then I was, yeah, it was pretty extreme. I think we basically rounded like three bases and more.
Whoa.
Happened all kind of in like one fell swoop.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is, I kind of like got a lot of my learning curve up. But yeah. Then it's sort of been, yeah. So, yeah, it was she.
Did we know each other?
I think so. Yeah, I think I did.
I feel like I kind of remember this.
I might have told you this story. Yeah,
I think I remember this.
Yeah. So I'm a late start person, but yeah, it was pretty extreme in my view. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know what was weird because I felt like she didn't really like me.
Was it a good experience?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I it was good.
Yeah.
But then like I feel like she didn't really like me that much. It was just like, this is what we do.
It was sport.
Yeah, I felt like that. And then the weird thing is, like, years later, I'll even now occasionally see her around town, and she kind of avoids eye contact.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it kind of weirds me out a little bit. But, yeah. Yeah, that was the first. It was kind of like, I got a lot of things covered in that first one.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because it wasn't a relationship.
Right.
That's what I realized at a certain point. I'm like, this is not really a relationship.
Right. How,
Because she was, like, an out-of-towner.
Oh, yeah. I think I do remember this. Is stand-up getting easier? Is it unbelievably scary?
It's not unbelievably scary, but it's not getting easier.
Yeah. How long have you been doing it now?
The first time I did stand-up technically would be, I guess, 08. I did the first couple things. I opened for Sam McFeeters at a thing. I did this... The first bit I ever did was not really a bit.
Yeah.
It was just me talking about the Indiana Jones movie and how terrible it was.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I did Beth Lissick's Porch Light series.
Those. Yeah.
Those were great. I don't remember the first time I did that. I might have done the first one in 09 or something like that. So, yeah, I think I started doing a little bit of stand-up that wasn't really stand-up. Like, there was barely a joke in any of those things.
Right, yeah.
And, like, now I'm at the point where I'm more intimidated because I've seen all the good stand-ups.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it's worse.
Right.
When I only knew, like, a couple people and I would only, like, be like, oh, I've heard the Patton Oswalt album.
Right.
I can do this.
Right.
And then when you're up with people that are, like, really good,
oh, God.
That is what's intimidating. It's more that.
It seems like the scariest thing. I would love to do it. I'm way too scared to do it. It seems like far and away the hardest performance you could possibly do.
Yeah.
Possibly take off.
The act of doing it is not so... When it goes terribly, when it goes bad, it is really, really awful. When it goes well, it is really the most fun.
I bet.
Because, like, think of all the... Well, you're a solo performer, yeah. So you get that to some extent.
Yeah.
I had this thing, comparing it to music, because I have done so much with music. My comparison would be... When one of my bands would not do well with an audience,
yeah.
You always had an out.
Right.
You'd be like, they didn't get it.
Right, yeah.
It was not for them.
Right.
When you're doing badly in comedy, it's like, well, did they understand English?
Right.
Then you might not be doing your job properly. Right.
Yeah.
Which is weird. It's just a good thing where, like, with music, I think I got to the point where I was like, I don't care about the audience anymore.
Yeah.
And then with this, it's like, it's only about how you work with the audience.
Right.
So it is more difficult. I was less stressed out about it the less I knew about how it worked.
Yeah.
Now I know more about how it works. And, yeah, it's intimidating going up with other people that I think are really good.
Right.
I can entertain a room full of strangers in my own way, usually.
Right.
But then I really had this thing of, like, they're like, I had other people being like, well, you take too long to get to your things. Your setups are too long.
Right.
When I get specific feedback that's constructive criticism from people,
yeah.
That is, like, a different thing than just, well, like, in my head, this is funny.
Right.
And I think that's what you learn by the more you do it.
Right.
And then it does put more pressure on you.
Right, yeah.
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 Everybody to step.
Good sounds.
Yeah.
Good sounds.
Yeah.
I wonder if I'm trying to think of anything else I should say about music or about your drawing or your art or something.
Yeah, I mean,
can't really, like, if the drawing, I just have to, like,
yeah, well, something. I mean, the drawings and music and drawing music and short stories are totally identical to me. The drawings look the way my music sounds, and the stories read the way the drawings look, and the music sounds like they're the exact, which is true. I think, like, Paul Costoros, his drawings look exactly like Total Shutdown, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's true of most people that do that stuff.
Like yeah, people that do all those things, like, yeah, there's a thread that goes through it.
Yeah.
Thinking of, like, the way that Dwyer's art has gone, it's gone really crazy lately. It's gone really psychedelic in a really specific
way. He's gotten so good at drawing.
Yeah, yeah, his drawings have gotten really good.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a talented guy.
Yeah, yeah. That's another guy who's, like, made it kind of work from the scene. Like, that's all he's doing now.
Yeah, right.
Is doing OCs.
Yeah.
And
that's no surprise to me.
He's a driven dude. He's always been a driven dude.
He's so hardworking.
Yeah.
And so, he's just very organized and methodical about it all, and his level of productivity is inspiring.
Yeah, and he's kind of always been that way. But
always been that way.
Like,
yeah.
But it was almost to the point, I think, where, like, some of us, where you have too many projects. Like, he, for a while, he had, like, too many things, but he just focused it all into this one thing now.
Right.
And but that's what it is.
I've always appreciated about John that I can't think of a downtime since we met that dude in 99.
Mm-hmm.
He's been cranking out exceptionally good music the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always a good guitar player, but man, he is an unbelievable guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And the first, when I met him, he was playing drums. I think that was the first time I met him at the Bernese show. And he's good at that. He's good. He's just a talented guy.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty
mm-hmm.
cool.
Yeah. I feel like we know, a lot of people that are talented, but then maybe they don't have that thing to, like, pimp themselves out in a way.
Well, it can be frustrating to watch because we have so many friends that have all these talents, but they don't. There's another component to that, a desire to share it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's several more steps to go from writing a song to getting it on a record and then going on tour with it. That's a lot more steps than just writing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a bunch of friends I'd like to see way more from.
Yeah. And, well, like Pete's doing a lot, but then he's also got this job.
Oh, yeah, he's got a full-on career.
Yeah,
he's still grinding, though. Yeah.
Yeah, he likes doing that. Well, that's kind of like what I was saying about the thing about the stand-up thing. It's like, I think we know a lot of people that are very funny.
Yeah.
But they may not do well with the format where you get up and you stand in front of strangers and you talk about yourself for, like, 5 minutes.
Right. So I've
a different skill.
I've thought of it because I've had sets doing solo shows that got a lot of laughs, and I'd find myself, you know, trying to improve sets to get more laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so gratifying hearing that, because there's nothing I'd rather be doing than laughing. It feels so good. Mm-hmm. But now the success of my set is I'm gauging it based on laughter. And then I see someone who's just playing straight music getting no laughs, and people are still enjoying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But then my barometer for the success of a set is if folks are laughing and totally happy if they're playing a song that's not funny. Like, not every song is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely, for a while there, definitely tweaked my perception of how, if a show was good or not.
Yeah.
If they had laughed or not. But man, I mean, it was so exciting hearing folks laugh, because you know you can't fake that, and you can't not enjoy yourself if you're laughing. So you know they're having a good time when they're doing that.
My kind of way, the thing that's been happening for me is, like, it'll be kind of mellow, and then I'll get kind of the groan laugh.
Right.
And, like, oh, a lot of groaning. It's like kind of a groan that's a laughing groan.
Right.
I'm like, I kind of want something a little more elevated, a little more, like, up here.
Right.
Not like a, wah!
Yeah.
But I don't know how to get to that point yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is, like, yeah, like, if you don't get any response, that is the worst.
Right.
No response is the worst.
Was it in the same way that playing in the bands we played in, if people are moving, then it seems like it's going okay.
Right.
But if folks are just standing there, oh, no.
Yeah.
And there are so many bands that their audience have no movement, laughter, and the audiences are just wrapped, having the best time of their life.
Yeah, like people love, like, a band of horses or something like that, where it's just like like Sufjan Stevens or something, and it's like, yeah, maybe there's a joke in there once or twice, but it's like, it's a different thing they're going for.
I feel like they maybe have some more confidence in their material.
Yes.
They don't need that affirmation of people dancing.
Right.
Or having funny stuff in there to joke.
Right.
To be like, you like it, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the case, but it seems like that might be.
So you do like, yeah, it's interesting because that was one of the things I was kind of thinking is like, I didn't think that you like needed the affirmation as much as, or like you seem like very confident about what you're doing in a way where the affirmation is pretty secondary.
No. I think anyone that stands in front of an audience is doing it to share and be like, do you like this too? I made this. I like it. Do you like it? Mm-hmm. And I definitely feel confident in, I feel confident on what I'm playing and like it, but you can't beat having somebody agree with you.
right. Yeah. That has been the thing. I'm kind of like, I'm confident that this is maybe a good idea, but maybe you don't like me.
Right.
And that's the part where I get caught up on it. I'm like, this is probably good. I'm not sure how I feel about myself.
Right.
Maybe you guys can help me out with that. Okay. What, you want someone who's a little bit more sure of themselves? Okay. Well.
And it's funny because that goes two ways too. When someone is extremely confident, most of the time that inspires confidence in you as a viewer too.
Right.
But that can backfire too. Oh, this guy's a jerk.
Yeah.
And then opposite is true too. If someone's mousy, you can go, oh, too mousy, or if they're mousy and they shred, you go, oh, this is fantastic.
Right.
So it's across the board, I think, for that stuff. It's hard to put your finger on what makes something compelling to watch and what makes it boring.
Yeah, but I think of like you as being someone who's like very talented, but also like has a humility about what you do.
Thanks.
Yeah. Like, think that's, I don't know, you hear that a lot, but that's, I think that's the way you don't come across as like, I need this to gratify my ego.
Right.
You know, which is what I think a lot of the people that we know, it is more of that thing. It's just like, fill this hole.
Sure.
And this is getting a little Marin, but you know what I'm saying? Like, sure, there's part of that thing, too.
No, so, I think anyone that gets in front of an audience has a little bit of that.
Yeah. And, well, I feel like this has been good.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, Sadie.
Want to say
some fart sounds.
You want to say that?
All right. Good enough.
Quiet for the sign-off.